Welcome to The Art Scene, presented each week by UALR's College of Arts, Humanities and Social Sciences and UALR Public Radio. When Zubin Mehta introduced Midori as a surprise guest at the New York Philharmonic's traditional New Year's Eve concert in 1982, she was 11 years old. The instant stardom and attendant publicity has followed her ever since, and she has become a major force in many different areas of musical performance, education, and promotion of new works and new composers. In 2012-13, her 30th anniversary season, she premieres two new violin concertos, tours the United States, Japan, and Europe, presenting the complete violin sonatas and partitas of Johann Sebastian Bach, plays more than 10 concerto concerts, and supports the 4 community programs that she has founded in the United States and Japan. One of these last is the Orchestra Residencies Program, which is what is bringing her to Little Rock this week. Founded in 2004 to support and encourage youth orchestras in America. 2 winning applicant youth orchestras are chosen each year by an independent committee for week-long residencies with Midori. She collaborates in a wide range of activities with the youth orchestra and the parent orchestra. Masterclass, workshops, coaching, meeting supporters in the community, team building, and other events culminating in a performance with the youth orchestra, followed the next day by her appearance as soloist with the main orchestra, in this case, the Arkansas Symphony Orchestra, April 13th and 14th. She is Distinguished Professor of Music at the University of Southern California, where she is now based. Her mother and brother, also a violinist, live in New York. She remembers something of those early years.
It's pointed out, of course I remember it, but it's not something I think about.
And I was curious, though, if it's reflected in your working so much with young musicians now.
How so?
Well, that when you start young, you become much more accustomed to playing in public, in ensembles, in chamber music. The youth orchestra that we have here in Little Rock is excellent and gets tremendous support from the main symphony. And they are so poised and they garner great attention and applause and affection because they see them through the growing years so often. And the way you work with the young made me wonder if some of the experiences you've had growing up have been very much part of your decision to do the things you do.
I actually enjoy working very much with the community, including children. And I'm, you know, certain that for anyone's life, overall experiences, they all impact the way you live your life. I wouldn't necessarily say that they're specific to what I do more recently, such as working in the community with the children or with the sick or otherwise confined to whatever situations. I wouldn't necessarily say that it's a direct outcome of my younger days experiences, but that it certainly has some kind of connection to it as well.
As you say, you do so many things relative to community involvement. You have these 4 or 5, is it, special programs apart from working with the orchestras. You have that's the orchestra residencies. I love the sound of the music sharing and the international community engagement, because these are all outcroppings from the groundwork that you're providing advice to, involving yourself with in different parts of the world, not just here in America. And look at what you've done with yourself in getting degrees in psychology.
I don't think that I do more or less than, you know, my colleague. I enjoy very much what I get to do. I'm appreciative. I'm grateful for the things I'm able to do. Each of my projects, I think, also influence and inspire other projects that I have. So, you know, they all work together. I think that if I were to take one thing out, then it would go off balance.
Yes, I could see, because each one is so much a component of the whole.
Mm-hmm.
The other aspects, of course, of your life at the moment are your performances, your engagements around the world, and your exploration of new composers, of music. And I wondered what draws you to certain composers from whom you've commissioned works. Is there any one thing in particular that you found appeals to you, that draws you to one over the many others that there are?
I think there are many, many composers that inspire me, many, many composers that attract me to them, many, many that I wish that I could have more opportunities to work with. And yet, you know, I'm only able to really work with a very, very, very small number of them, relatively speaking. Each composer, I think, offers something unique. It may be something rhythmic or something melodic or something, you know, texture-wise or so many different things. And quite often, it's never so simple to be able to explain what it is, but it's a combination of so many elements.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, you know, by a particular way the combination is made up of, certainly makes each one unique.
Yes, and you've already played one new one this year. It was due to be played in January in Los Angeles, that had been commissioned by three organizations, the Los Angeles Philharmonic, the Proms in London, and the Gewandhaus in Leipzig.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a demand on your time and on your commitment to getting the best out of the music and the performance. And then there's another one you're going to be premiering by an Austrian composer.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as though you could just take it off and work on it to the full command of every minute, when every minute other than those minutes are taken up with others. Is this just because you are extraordinarily well organized?
I would never call myself extremely well organized. What? Yes, not extremely well organized. I have a lot of enthusiasm. Maybe that's what it is. I have a lot of enthusiasm for the things that I get to do, and I have a great appreciation for the opportunities that I've received, and for the ones that I keep getting, you know, to be able to do things. I have great inspirations coming from the everyday.
And ideas, obviously, a mind that just focuses on, like you say, walking, getting out early in the morning. There's an inspiration that can hit you without you knowing it, even if you're just thinking of something else that gives you that extra zest to continue.
Yes, I think so. I don't know if it's extra, you know, to have me continue, but no, I do find my life to be very, very full in the most interesting way.
Yes, you don't waste time on the useless wishings or regrets or reflections on what might have been. You just keep going with the inspiration and the results that enthusiasm has.
I think that is true, yes.
And when you come here, and we'll be working as much as you will with the youth orchestra, and we're all in great enthusiasm on our part to see you and hear you, it is obviously an involvement with the total community that you are expecting, that you'll meet people who are supporters as well as the members of the musical fraternity, the people who work in both the orchestras, in the community groups, this is a relatively small state, so that there's a lot of runouts, there are a lot of commitments to taking small ensembles, particularly from the main orchestra, into different parts of the state. And our music director, Philip Mann, and he's full of enthusiasm.
Mm-hmm.
I sometimes think that his enthusiasm can't be matched, but maybe you and he will find common ground in that respect. But it's a lot of exposure on your part to aspects of the country, the land where you are, that will give you so much more in terms of knowing parts of the world in a way that very few other musicians, performers are able to.
That's certainly true.
And so you commit yourself to 2 a year when you leave from something like that, this, when you come here next week. What are the guidelines or notes or recollections, memories that you focus on so that when you think Little Rock, you'll instantly remember certain things? When you think the other places that you've been that are so different in terms of the countries and the states that you've been visiting?
No, I have specific things that I remember. I don't try to decide, so to say, what I'm going to remember about or what kind of things I'm going to specifically try to look for in order to construct certain types of memories. I take everything as they come. And I allow myself, I encourage myself to be open. Like I had said earlier about it being inspired by the everyday, I don't mastermind what the inspiration is going to be. And it certainly does not have to be something like in a movie that is, say, you know, probably an extremely eventful occasion. But it could be things that are very simple. It really depends. But if I'm open to be influenced, open to be inspired, then there are many, many, many opportunities, many chances. And so in terms of going to a new city, and Little Rock actually is not new. I've been there before. There could be things just, you know, unexpected. And I think that's why it's very nice, you know, that my memory isn't made up of just a series of episodes.
Right.
But they're just things that I remember. And it's special to me, may not be special to others. But for me, they do make me remember.
It's still enough to have the memory of a particular place and time. And this obviously is where the impact of your being here is so fruitful, because being enthusiastic, not having an agenda, you're relaxed. You're waiting to draw in all the impressions. And with that, the people that we will interact with, particularly the youth orchestra, the parents, the teachers, that helps to have its own identity in your memory.
That I think is right. And it makes it interesting. I enjoy them very much, particularly these youth orchestra weeks, the ORP weeks. So many things happen.
That was Midori, the legendary violinist who comes to Little Rock this week to work with members of the Arkansas Symphony Orchestra youth orchestras, fulfilling the promise when she selected the Arkansas Symphony's youth orchestras for the one of two annual visits in her orchestra residencies program established in 2004. The other this year is in Reading, Pennsylvania. While in Little Rock, beginning April the 10th, Midori will be coaching the Arkansas Symphony Orchestra youth orchestras on a daily basis through Sunday the 14th, rehearsing Forte, the youth orchestra string quartet, for two performances open to the public with her at the New Children's Library on 10th Street, 3:45 to 4:45 on Friday, April the 12th, and 3:30 to 4:30 at the Terry Library, Saturday the 13th. She will be rehearsing the youth orchestra for its performance, also with her, at 7:30, Friday the 12th, in Robinson Center Music Hall. Then Midori will join the Arkansas Symphony Orchestra as soloist in the Tchaikovsky Violin Concerto, Saturday, April the 13th, at 8 p.m., and Sunday the 14th at 3, in Robinson Center Music Hall. For tickets, call 501-666-1761 or visit arkansasymphony.org. Some arts events around the state. In Hot Springs, the Hot Springs Pocket Community Theatre production of Lillian Hellman's The Little Foxes opened on Friday and runs through April the 14th, 7:30 Friday and Saturday, 2:30 today and April the 14th. In Conway tomorrow at Hendricks College, hear the DDG Woodwind Trio, Beth Wheeler English Horn, Lorraine Duzo Kitts and Leanna Booz Oboes, in recital, 7:30 in Reeves Recital Hall. And across town, the UCA Theatre production of the rock musical Spring Awakening has two final performances, April 11th and 12th, 7:30 each evening, in the Bridges Larson Theatre, Snow Fine Arts Centre. In Pine Bluff, April the 13th, Old Town Theatre Centre presents magician-comedian Craig Diamond, 7:30 at the Pine Bluff Country Club, dinner at 6 p.m.
Here's a look at what's happening in the arts in Central Arkansas. This afternoon at 2, Ballet Arkansas presents Spring Into Motion, a new ballet concert at the Arkansas Rep. Parkview Magnet High School presents the musical Hairspray this afternoon at 3 at Metcalf Auditorium on the Parkview campus. This evening, Trinity presents the Collegiate Performance Showcase, 6 p.m. at Trinity United Methodist Church on Mississippi. Going on right now at the Arkansas Arts Center, the second day of a workshop with Ron Myers of the University of Georgia about ceramics. And from noon to 3 today at the Arts Center, the 52nd Young Arkansas Artist Awards Reception and Family Festival. Wednesday at the Arts Center, the Rocktown Slam at 6 p.m. And Art of Motion Tango is Thursday from 7 to 10:30 p.m. Then Saturday at the Arkansas Arts Center, Art on Art, an Ekphrastic Poetry Slam, 7 p.m. And this Friday, it's Second Friday Art Night, with museums, art galleries, and shops open from 5 to 8 p.m. in downtown Little Rock. On display around town, at the Arkansas Arts Center, Wendy Murayama Executive Order 9066, and Edward Weston's Leaves of Grass. At the Clinton Presidential Center, Jazz Through the Eyes of Herman Leonard. And at the MacArthur Museum of Arkansas Military History, Undaunted Courage, Proven Loyalty, Japanese-American Soldiers in World War II. And that's a look at the arts calendar for this week. For more on what's going on in Arkansas, visit our online calendar at ualrpublicradio.org.
Chris Brubeck and Triple Play have been to Little Rock before, brought also by Artspree in 2007. So there'll be those in the audience next Sunday more than delighted to hear again, live, this trio of extraordinary musicians. Chris Brubeck, composer and performer. He sings, plays trombone, bass fiddle, piano, and guitar. Joel Brown, who has performed with the London Symphony with Dawn Upshaw and Frederica von Stade, amongst others, recognized as an incomparable guitarist. While Peter Madcap Ruth and the harmonica are inseparable and unique. Chris, growing up with his brothers and fully engaged in the family and musical life of their father, Dave Brubeck, whose death last year was mourned and life was celebrated worldwide, is comfortable in just about every genre of music. Recognized first as an innovative jazz, rock performer and composer, touring and recording with his father, then with his own groups, whether it's jazz, blues, folk, funk, pop, or classical. This last form he is making very much his own. Already in demand as an orchestral composer, so the following conversation does jump around a bit. Since your last visit, I think, is in 2007, four of your major orchestral pieces premiered.
That led to another big piece, which is the group that violinist in is called Time for Three. So that group had me write a concerto for them, which is two violinists in a...
And what do you call that, Time for Three?
That one's called Travels in Time for Three. They're very interesting. They're all classically trained guys that love jazz and bluegrass. So they have their own... I mean, it's a bit in the sort of Mark O'Connor direction, but, mm-hmm. you know, kind of liberated classical musicians that love all kinds of music. Jennifer Higdon wrote a concerto for them. I wrote my concerto, and then... Suddenly, William Bolcom is writing a concerto for him.
Oh, yes, hot on the path of getting the Oresteia, the Mio piece, put on at Ann Arbor at the University of Michigan.
I like that, too. But, you know, it's funny you say Mio because amongst the many things I've done since we've last spoken is I was in France playing with an orchestra, and one of the things we did was... A program that was all tied in where they did Mio's Creation of the World, and because that was one of the earliest pieces with jazz influences, and my father studied with Darius Mio, it ended up, they also included our piece called Ansel Adams America, and I don't think I had written that yet either, which is I wrote that with my father, and it's a piece that we were the first people to get the rights to project Ansel Adams photographs over the orchestra while they played. And there was about 8 orchestras involved in that, and there's been many performances, and I'm delighted to say that it was up for a Grammy a few months ago for Best Instrumental Composition. Good feeling.
Interesting that you mentioned Jennifer Higdon, because she's been our Composer of the Year all year. This is something that our music director, conductor, has brought in a Composer of the Year. Last year, it was Michael Torkey. And this year, it's been Jennifer Higdon, and she's been here for the Concerto for Orchestra.
Just doing a lot of her pieces, like almost every program.
Starting off the first concert of the year, the 6 concerts we have, and then we have a chamber series as well, so several of her pieces, shorter pieces, have been on those.
Great, and it's contemporary music, but it's not completely something that scares people away. I think people get excited about it. It's welcoming, and I think there's a good reason why she's our most played contemporary.
The composers and performers in music these days seem to be very eager to explore all possibilities. So you find jazz and popular composers and people like yourself who cross every boundary to try what's new, what appeals, what hasn't been done quite yet in quite this way. And I was just wondering, when you're working on your orchestral pieces, do you set aside the things in jazz and triple play that you do just because you've got absorbed in the surroundings that are orchestral works?
I think what happens is that my ears and my brain is so filled with music from all these different genres that when I express myself in any context that I'm writing, it just happens to come out as part of my language. I started getting a reputation as someone that was good at expressing myself in a jazzy way in the orchestral world. Part of my vocabulary is probably wider than a lot of classical composers. But there are some, like Michael Gandolfi is a very wonderful composer, and he was a rock and roll guitarist before he became a composer. So I think that the rules have loosened up. So as you mentioned, there's more permission than ever before for composers to borrow from all these different genres and mix them together.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the audiences are growing older, and those people now are the people that grew up with the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and probably have wide enough appetites to like classical music, too, or they wouldn't be in the hall. But that also means they sure as hell couldn't escape the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and the Beach Boys and B.B. King and Dave Brubeck and, all the blues artists that are out there. So I find that a lot of the populace and audience goers also have eclectic ideas of music that will resonate with them swimming around their brains.
And of course, the people who are providing the music that appeals to people of the Beatles generation and who've grown up also exploring other paths that took them further away from the absolute classical ideal, which was in place and still is to many in many ways. We'll be coming across ideas that might catch your fancy, and you would see a way where what you play, how you play it, and the instruments that you use to play on fit very kindly outside the various, I wouldn't say boxes, because box implies something closed and square, the different categories where you would not think automatically of trying something in another field unless you've had this moment of connection or inspiration.
Right. And the other aspect as a composer you think of is that the musicians themselves, and I've seen it in my lifetime when I was first doing orchestral concerts with my father's group, they were so classically trained that if you tried to get them to sound jazzy, they couldn't do it anyhow. So therefore, you wouldn't write that way because you were writing for something doomed for failure. But now a younger generation of musicians have all gone to conservatories where they had friends that were jazz musicians and composers. And so if you ask them to play something jazzy, their ears are more wide open and receptive, and they also know how to execute jazzier ideas in a better way. So that makes it all open up even more.
Now, the great thing about jazz that makes people so excited when you go to a jazz concert is where suddenly they take off and one will improvise on certain ideas. And there was something I read or talked to, somebody was mentioning that classical composers are starting to experiment with that.
Of trying to get more improvised music back into classical music.
Yes, and also on the concert stage with the soloist.
Yeah, well, that would be great. Certainly it's possible, like Nick Kendall, the fellow I wrote Spontaneous Combustion, the violin concerto for, he is not so much a jazz musician, but he's not afraid to improvise classical music. And that's kind of a rare commodity. But one of the very interesting ways that we wrote this piece is that I had him come to my house and we recorded jam sessions where I was playing a keyboard with sort of an orchestra sound and playing, and we were responding to each other. And so the kind of energy that we had between each other were the seeds of the ideas that became the thing that, I transformed those jam session ideas into the actual pieces. I also wanted to say that, my father always talked a lot about that. He under the encouragement of Mio, when he was studying with him, my father said that he really wanted to learn how to be a European composer. And Mio said, "Are you crazy? All the hip European composers are trying to figure out how to learn how to become jazz musicians, because that's the newest, coolest thing in music, is to try to incorporate jazz back into classical music." Dave followed his advice, and I grew up doing many concerts with Dave where I would hear him, have set orchestral backgrounds to the string players or reading their parts or whatever, but it was a background on which the jazz musician would improvise. And, there are certain classical players that are getting that skill back. I'm sure they can do it. There's a guy named Matt Herskowitz out of Montreal who's very good at that kind of thing. And I've also heard people play Rhapsody in Blue. They will say yes, and he's really going to improvise in different places over these backgrounds. So I think that's the spirit of things. Stravinsky has a great quote that composition is selective improvisation. It's a very short quote that you have to have a creative thought. If you're a jazz musician, you have it, you play it, it's gone. If you're a classical musician, you have it, you hear it, and you say, I think that's worth writing down and keeping, and then you work with it. So you're selecting that improvisation, and now once you start shaping it and extending and extrapolating and harmonizing it and doing all the things that you can do to it, then it's now you're in the world of composition.
Your triple play group coming here for the second time is just one little episode. You go, I don't know how much touring you're doing at the moment with all your orchestral connections, but it must be, again, the joyous persuasion of what you're doing that there'll be things happen in each live concert that's not exactly written down on paper.
Oh, my God. First of all, in the case of triple play, everything we do was never written down on paper. And then, at the most, at some point in the evolution of a piece, maybe we wrote down the chord changes on a napkin with a couple bar lines and some letter symbols like C minor 7th, A flat 9th, or whatever, and then it's very spontaneous listening interpretation, and for sure nothing's the same every night.
Chris Brubeck of Triple Play, the fourth and final concert of the 2012-13 Artspree season, 3 p.m. Sunday, April the 14th, in the Stella Ball-Smith Concert Hall, Fine Arts Building at UALR. For tickets, call the Fine Arts Center box office, 501-569-8993. And that concludes this week's program. Please join us next weekend at the same time. I'm Ann Nicholson. Thank you for listening.
The Art Scene is a presentation of UALR's College of Arts, Humanities, and Social Sciences and UALR Public Radio.